Hey, everybody, it's Control Center by Cavo. This holiday season, give your loved ones the gift of stress-free TV with Control Center by Cavo. Control Center cleans up your home theater so you can control everything connected to your TV with one easy-to-use, family-friendly remote. Shop now, get 40% off Control Center with the promo code DAVE, D-A-V-E. That's $59.95, 40% off the regular price of $99.95. Control Center available at Cavo. That's CAAVO.com and Best Buy. Control Center by Cavo. One remote that does it all. And coming up now on the Dave Dameshek football program, we have Whitney Mercilus of the Houston Texans. We have Cam Hayward of the Pittsburgh Steelers. Willie McGinnis of the Cleveland Browns and another pro football team. And Maurice Jones-Drew here to chop it up in between weeks 15 and 16. Let's start the show.
It's the footballiest time of the year. Football. With quarterbacks throwing and tailgaters ready for some brats and beer. It's the footballiest time of the year. It's the pigskiniest season of all. Belichick is still frowning and Cleveland still browning. We root for Steelers. It's the pig skinniest time of the year.
Hi and hello, football fans, and happy holidays wherever you are. I hope it's filled with mirth and song and cookies and family and friends and eggnog and all that kind of stuff. Here in Studio 66, we're overflowing with festivities and jolliness and so on and so forth. And not just because it's the holidays, but because week 16 is fast approaching here. Seated to my immediate left, my main man from the East Bay.
Main man.
I don't know where that came from. That just kind of fell out of me there. I don't know. I was just going with it.
I guess I'll catch it and hold it.
That's all, you know. It's all like improv, like MVP behind the glass. That's her thing. Like, I'm just going,
improv,
man.
Improv is amazing.
What do you mean? You've done some of that?
I've done a lot.
I could see you doing that, actually. By the way, it's Maurice Jones-Drew, everybody. That's who I meant to say hello to. Happy holidays. We haven't the time for song right now.
No.
We are playing other songs. Anyway, Maurice, you've done a little improv, eh?
I've done a little bit. Mm-hmm. It's been fun. I at first it was just me and my buddies doing it, like when we go out on trips and stuff, boys trips, like we do improv, but it wasn't like improv, but then I actually did improv, and I found out there was nothing different.
MVP, do you think, based on your professional experience, that Maurice, of all the players that work at the NFL, is the number one?
I do. Yeah, Maurice is great.
Is that because Maurice is the only one who can hear you right now?
Definitely. Okay. No, he's always a yes-and guy. He'll go with anything.
Yeah, you just got to be able to go with the flow.
He's a yes-ander. That's right.
I'm comfortable being uncomfortable. That makes sense.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense to me. Oh. Yeah, I know exactly
that's all
tension in your brain goes, or in your heart or whatever. Anyway, Maurice, by the way, go back and listen. Great first podcast this week with Mina Kimes from ESPN.
Oh, she's great.
Mina Kimes.
She's phenomenal.
She really is, yeah.
Yeah, I love her. I love her work on The Highly Questionable.
Yes, we talked about that. Do you think I look like Dan Le Batard?
No.
A lot of people say I do.
No.
No?
No, not even close.
I don't know what that, like, you act like I'm asking for a comp. Like,
no, I don't think he's like, they don't look nothing like each other. I mean, you both have brunette hair, I guess.
The Rams don't look like Rams, or at least the Rams of September and October and much of November. What gives here?
Yeah, you know, watching the games, you're seeing a lot of interior pressure. You're seeing Jared Goff not be comfortable. And I've seen Coach McVay try to switch his scheme up a little bit, but this is that time of the year. We always talk about it where you have to run the football and you have to be a physical team. Scoring points really doesn't matter in this situation. That only matters in September and October. Once you get to after Thanksgiving, it's about finishing games and ending games quickly. Right now, you saw the Chicago Bears do that to the Los Angeles Rams. The Philadelphia Eagles ran the ball at them. So those are things that they have to try to fix and work on. I've always been, I've always had questions of why not carry a fullback on your roster because of times like this. And that's something that they're starting to see. Like, it's starting to happen where they have to start running the ball a little bit more. And when you have a fullback, it allows you to be able to run through some of these loaded boxes. So we'll see how they do. I know Todd's got banged up a little bit. But, you know, spoke with him. He says, you know, it's just some things he's working through. And it's late in the year. Everyone's banged up. So I'm excited to see what they do the next couple games, because you have to win these next two to get that bye week, which they really need. They're a team that's beat up a little bit right now. And, you know, that is just part of the year. So you want to heal up and keep those games at home.
I hear you. And is there a concern, because the larger picture, it's not just something that's afflicting the Rams offense. It does seem like the defenses, it doesn't seem that way. Clearly, the defenses are starting to, you know, hold their own. And how now? How much... at this point, I know obviously you're in the booth with the Rams, but do you now suspect that it's swinging back in favor of the Bears and the Seahawks and the Ravens and teams that are playing that brand of ball?
Well, the thing is, you know, right now it's not even that brand of football. It's home games. You want to play at home, period, because throughout the league, teams that are at home have a better chance of winning for some reason.
I still don't get why.
Me either. I don't understand it. But when you look at everything, you know, the Saints are a more dominant team at home than they are on the road. The Rams are a more dominant team at home than they are on the road, even though they lost to Philly. They played much better than they did against Chicago, right? Chicago's defense is much more dominant in Chicago than it is anywhere else. And so with those things being said, you're just trying to fight for home field advantage. You have to find a way.
Is that, but for a defense specifically, we saw that in the clink with those high-end Seahawks teams. They would always say, Averill and Bennett would say, we would get a jump because the crowd would be so loud that we could actually jump at the line of scrimmage a split second earlier.
Well, because you got to remember, it's the quarterback can't use his voice, so he's using his hands. And so whenever you see the quarterback jump up, you can take off and jump because, you know, the ball's coming right there. So it's when you have a great defense, you always want to be at home. When you have a great offense, you always want to be at home because you can work. On the road, there's different issues that come throughout. And we saw it on Monday night with the Saints. I mean, they're in Carolina. Carolina's lost five straight. And there was a reason everyone was trying to say Carolina has a chance to win, because they play outside. It's a little bit different than being in the dome. It's tougher, and it's just a completely different. And so I think more of the weather's starting to change. You know, some people say real football is being played now. But also the fans are more into it this time of the year because the games mean so much more.
I get all that. But, I mean, by the way, are the Saints now the team to beat out of the NFC? I mean, who is even the best team?
Well, the Bears have been
playing great. I guess it is the Bears.
The Bears are playing great football right now. And I know, you know, talking with a lot of players and talking with a lot of people, a lot of teams don't want to face them.
I know, but you know what, though? They are going to have to do what your former team, the Jaguars, did in 2017, which is, to some degree, Mitch Trubisky is better than Bortles. I'm not making that case. But they are going to have to hide him a little bit.
Oh, no question. I mean, I called the game where, you know, if you force him to go off his first read and to throw over the middle, he sells the ball. He throws a high ball, and it sails on him sometimes.
I think if you get through the first two possessions against the Bears' offense, they show everything they have.
Right.
They're going to try and trick you up with get some points and then defend that lead the rest of the way.
That's the other thing.
If you can survive that as the other team, you beat them.
You cannot trick people in the playoffs. That's
why doesn't that work more?
Because – It's weird. Like, you just have to be able – you have to be better at what you do than what they do. So if you come in here with all these gadget plays and trick plays, it doesn't work. And, you know, what I've seen, you know, over the last couple of years, when you look at the Minnesota Vikings last year or the Minnesota Vikings last week, they just came down and ran downhill. There was no more run RPOs. They were like, look, we're going to run downhill, and then when we want to throw the ball, we'll throw the ball. But we're going to do what we do best. And last year, that's what they did. That's why they had such a great record. They ran the ball. They leaned on the running game, and Case Keenum didn't turn the ball over. And so I think that's the formula to do it. I mean, that's what the Jaguars did last year. You're starting to see that's what the Saints are doing. The Saints are running the ball at a very high rate. As much as Drew Brees is throwing the ball and people want to talk about how great he is, which he is a really good quarterback, they're running the ball at a high rate. They want to run the ball.
It's the point of reference for everybody, but go back and the year that Drew Brees finally gets his one Lombardi that he still has now, it was owed to the fact that they were turning around and running the ball and running a lot of those safe routes to Pierre Thomas, and now they're doing that with Kamara. Maurice, are the Rams, though, I'm trying to do the math on this, are they, because the national noise is, boy, why aren't they running Todd Gurley more? And you just hinted at it there. I think McVay is doing Gurley a favor because they don't have anybody really to run the ball with, and they're playing the long game here, which is we want Gurley to be right for January, and he's not right currently.
Well, in Detroit, you lost Malcolm Brown, and that's what hurt, because Malcolm Brown could have been that guy that you could have put in.
Right.
And guys, now you're leaning on an undrafted free agent and a late-round pick. A rookie late round pick at that. And so, you know, it's tough for him to do that. Malcolm Brown going down, I didn't think at first was like a big deal, but I'm starting to see that it's a huge deal, because he was a guy that could come in, give Gurley a series or two, and he would, you know, they wouldn't miss a beat. Now you're trying to play some other guys who aren't really, you know, like Malcolm Brown. These are more slimmer guys who are more quicker, shiftier guys, and it just doesn't work out that way. So, you know, it comes down to winning these last two games, right? You have to go to Arizona, win in Arizona, and figure out a way to keep Todd healthy and get these young guys some reps in these games, because you're going to have to use them in the playoffs. You're not going to be able to run Todd.
I bet Gurley wouldn't even be out there had they beaten the Eagles on Sunday night.
No, he wouldn't probably. No, they probably would have shut him down for a couple weeks. And so it's important. And in at the end of the day, you know, I think as much as we want to, as much as we want to kind of tout these guys as geniuses and things like that, football will never change.
It's amazing that it does that always.
It will never change. And it's
eventually,
unreal.
Within the season, I doubted that in 2018 that I thought this is the year finally that the defenses are just the rules changes and everything else. The quarterbacks are now sufficient across the league, save a couple of places like in Jacksonville. And finally, now the defenses are never going to have an answer. And we didn't even get to the playoffs.
Because as soon as the weather turns, it's tougher to throw the ball. You got to remember, too, this is a marathon, right? I think Nipsey Hussle once said it's a marathon, not a sprint. And I got that from one of my boys that works for KCAL 9, too, by the way.
Other people have said that. It didn't come up.
Yeah, but you at the say if it's a 16-mile race we're running, at mile 10, your legs start hurting. And you got six more miles to go, and that's what this NFL is. At game 10, you don't feel like game 1 or 2 or 3. You start to hurt, so you have to start trying to figure out how to get this thing going. And for your offensive line, you want them to go forward, and you want to start shortening the game because you wanted to get the exposure of getting hurt. And that's the biggest thing is these games. That was the Sunday night game. That first half was fast as I don't know what. The first quarter was just run, whatever. And then the last 2 minutes of the first half was like just as long as the first two quarters. I was like, wow. Then the third quarter came in and they started kind of extending drives, but you want to shorten games. That's the whole part of this whole thing is who can get out of here as fast as possible with a W. That's the name of the game once you get in December and in the playoffs. So that's what you will see.
That's what Willie told us the Patriots were going to try and do, and they did try to do it, but the offensive line held too much, so they couldn't stick with that. But spinning that clock. Last thing, Maurice, because you got to go. 8 minutes isn't enough. An hour isn't enough with Maurice. But the last question is this. Any change based on Josh Adams, and now Jalen Samuels, and otherwise, that it doesn't make sense to use a first-round pick on a running back or to spend the kind of money that Le'Veon Bell expects to get this off?
So I had this question in my group chat, right? And someone, these numbers are crazy. Like, oh, the Pittsburgh is averaging 27 more points with these other two guys instead of Le'Veon Bell. And so my response is, okay, what was their record last year with Le'Veon Bell? What was their record last year?
13-3.
Okay. And what's their record this year?
Not as good.
No, what's the record this year?
8-5-1.
Well, then he's worth five games. As of right now, that's what you're telling me, that Le'Veon Bell and running the ball and having a dynamic back is worth five games. Look at Kansas City. Okay, they averaged 37 points with Kareem Hunt. Without Kareem Hunt, guess how many points?
I don't know.
27. That's a 10-point swing. You're talking about top-notch guys that dictate coverages. Why was AB all upset? Do we all know why AB was upset in the middle of the year?
Yeah, because they're doubling him and focusing the offense. Exactly.
When you have a top-notch running back and you can use all the numbers you want, because stats, you can slant stacks any way you want. I just did it with Kareem Hunt. At the end of the day, you want a guy that can dictate coverage. And if you have a guy that can dictate coverage in the back end where they have to load the box to try to stop the run, then your passing game
isn't the thing that you get from it, though, a steadying sort of influence, because it's sort of like what breaks if you're in the midst of a terrible snap of losses. The Steelers' ability, we can't beat anybody. What you saw in the Le'Veon Bell era in Pittsburgh was them on certain games. Just, you know what? This is a 35 touch game for 26.
Yeah, and Buffalo.
And we're going to ride.
Remember
They did it many times. They did it in Tennessee on a Thursday night. I've watched them.
But I'll say this too as well. Let's remember this. The Philadelphia Eagles, before, when they won the Super Bowl last year, they had LeGarrette Blount and Jay Ajayi.
I said that repeatedly.
And they ran the ball like no tomorrow. They were in the top five in the league.
Right.
Now, you know, they've been struggling because they couldn't run the ball. The RPO, there was no RPO in that situation. And so now you get Adams in there, who's now, you have someone you can lean on a little bit with the running game. Regardless if he's an undrafted guy or not, you want to lean on a guy and have the ability to do it. And it works. I mean, I always play the notion with quarterbacks, right? And I think we have a guy here who kind of defies everything in Kurt Warner. You know, people say, well, you can find a running back anywhere. Well, Kurt Warner was an undrafted dude, right? So you can find any player, really,
position. From New England who kind of is close to that description.
Exactly. Yeah. So don't tell me you need first-round quarterbacks when some Hall of Famers.
Well,
and
by the
some
way,
of
the, Joe. Yeah, I mean the
Joe
list,
Montana was like fourth round, right?
Or something. He's third round. If you want to play that game, that is funny. Johnny Unitas was cut by the Steelers.
A lot of dudes. So it doesn't. When you draft in the first round, you're just drafting the best player available that you have on your board is what you should be doing, or a player you think can change your game. That's why I think Saquon Barkley went to the Giants. Are you going to tell me you rather have some of these other quarterbacks than Saquon Barkley?
Yes.
No.
Yes, I would. I still think that's enough.
Who?
Don't look at spaghetti behind the glass. It gets subs. Sam Darnold is who I'd rather have. Yeah. Listen.
No, I'm going to tell you this stat.
All right, tell me whatever you want to tell me.
Do you know, and this is because I think Sam will eventually be a really good quarterback or a good quarterback. You know he leads the league in picks and missed four games?
I know.
Okay, that's all. All right.
You always have said that. You've been steadfast with saying, Maurice, that Sam Darnold has thrown
turnover machine.
Not going to change in the NFL.
So you want that?
No. I don't think it's the end of the world, though. Just because the world has been convinced by Belichick and Sean Payton that the most important thing from a QB is accuracy.
It is.
It's not. There's John Elway, Brett Favre, Ben Roethlisberger,
they won plenty of games. They're accurate more than Josh Allen and Sam Darnold.
Accuracy is something that can't be learned to some degree.
You can't learn accuracy. Either you have it or you don't. It's very simple.
Okay. But by the way, the other thing is with spaghetti behind the point I always make to spaghetti and anyone else who wants to argue Saquon with me is Walter Payton and Barry Sanders are two of the very best of all time. Until the very end of Walter Payton's career, neither one of them got anywhere close to a Super Bowl.
But I can make an argument about quarterbacks that are really good that haven't won a Super Bowl.
Maybe not won a Super Bowl, but if you have a good quarterback, you tend to be a consistent winner.
Well, Matt, let's look at Matt Ryan, for example.
I didn't put him into that group.
Oh, no. So who'd you put? Let's look at Aaron Rodgers this year.
He's phenomenal. Aaron Rodgers won five games this year. Maurice,
Come on, Shaq.
But all right. Eddie Spaghetti's mad. Now Eddie Spaghetti's angry that I said that about his new hero, and so now he's cut this interview off.
Darnold, really? I would almost say possibly Baker Mayfield, possibly.
Well, but he wasn't there.
I would almost say Lamar Jackson.
I could see that one as well. But it's devastating.
Even my guy, even the baby that I love and, you know, the chosen one, he's struggling right now. Mm-hmm. Quarterbacks need pieces around them to be successful.
Okay, Spaghetti is now saying that the network producers are texting.
It's time to go.
Go ahead, Maurice. Thank you so much. We thank you for your time. It's precious, as we know, especially around the holidays. All the best to the Jones-Drew clan up there in the East Bay. Have a happy holidays. And now let's get to Week 16, shall we?
You're listening to David
All right, man, we're on some run with the Walter Payton Man of the Year nominees. We've gotten to talk to a couple of them now. Maybe I'm a little biased here because I love the good work he's doing on the banks of the Three Rivers, where I may have mentioned once or 198 times before is my hometown. Hey, it's the Man of the Year nomination for your Pittsburgh Steelers. Cam Hayward, how are you, sir? Congratulations.
I'm good. Thank you very much.
Yeah, richly deserved, and looking forward to congratulating you for your deeds on the football field in a minute here. But in the meantime, tell us all about the great work, because there's so much stuff to cover that Cam and the Hayward House are doing around Pittsburgh these days.
Yeah, we do a lot around the city, but you know, I'm just very appreciative of the work we get to do. The Hayward House covers so much. We do Craig's Closet, which is new, very new. We partner with Sports Clips that we donate clothes, dress clothes, to young men that can't afford them. Yeah, my dad only had one suit growing up, so I wanted to do something to name his name that is very important to us.
That's
because you dress good, you play good.
Yeah, that's absolutely right, and it's meaningful stuff to a young guy to be able to put on that suit and tie. And of course, I remember, like I mentioned, growing up in Pittsburgh, I was at Pitt Stadium. I got to watch your dad play. I remember vividly watching him run over the mighty Miami Hurricanes in the rain. Should have won the Heisman Trophy, by the way. But yeah, tell us more. I really am interested in. I was not making the joke there, Cam. He should have won the Heisman Trophy
you
that
weren't.
Year. He deserved
it. Yeah, I've seen video. He deserved it.
Boy, he was awesome. And obviously you are as well. But tell us a little bit more about Hayward House, the different things that you're doing out there, because like I say, there's a multitude of good stuff.
Yeah, we've also partnered with Kids Voice and Boys and Girls Club that work with underprivileged kids, whether it's their after-school programs or having a birthday club around my birthday, but we get to celebrate their birthdays.
Oh, that's great. Love that.
Yeah, it's awesome. I'm very appreciative of being able to work with these young kids. And then we also work with the Southeastern Brain Tumor Association as well.
Well, I'm hoping that I will not run into you at NFL Honors on the eve of Super Bowl 53. I hope you win the trophy, but you cannot receive it in person because you're busy resting up for the big game the next day there in Atlanta, Georgia. In the meantime,
that would be pretty awesome.
Let's talk about the steps that you guys have taken to try and make that so. Specifically, what happened in Heinz Field. And by the way, I'm not saying this because I'm talking to you. Watching you in the second half, that was one of the great defensive performances of 2018 that I saw. You were bull rushing whoever lined up across from you. You were getting a Brady's own offensive lineman in Brady's face throughout that second half. That seemed to be a huge difference.
Yeah, when you're playing these really good quarterbacks, you just want to make sure you get in their face. They're not going to let you get the sack most of the time, but you just want to make sure put as much pressure as possible and make them throw it out of a well.
What was Coach Tomlin, I'm sure that permeates the locker room for you guys after the Oakland game, after the little bit of a skid there. What was Tomlin's mindset? I'm just fascinated by his ability to sort of rally the team amidst his own sort of, he was the guy who was being targeted more than anybody else in the organization. It's Mike Tomlin's fault that this losing streak. What was his mindset? What was he saying to you guys in advance of a game that you guys kind of had to have?
Honestly, he only said was just focus on what you can control. We may have let these last three games go away, but the only way to get over those games and the only way to get forward is to go through New England and focus on this game.
Do you guys, you know, we fans like to talk about the Patriots just have the Steelers number. You know, that's just the way it is. Do you guys consider that in advance of the game? How do we change things to change the result? Because it does keep, it does feel like 12 keeps getting the better of us.
Well, honestly, I don't really worry about the past. You know, teams are totally different year to year. They might have had Tom Brady all those years, but they're a different team, and we're a different team. We just try to focus on one game at a time and understand this game is the most important.
Do you guys, I thought what was a bold strategy that I didn't agree with in the moment, I thought, wait, the Steelers have the choice and they've decided to receive? Did you think, what are you doing, Coach T? Man, no. Give it, put him out there so we get the ball to start the second half.
Well, you know, I think the mindset was, let's start early, let's get a lead and see if they can catch us. We scored early and then they scored right away. It was really too quick as a defense. We didn't feel comfortable like that. But we just kept fighting, and the second half was get off the field quick and get the ball back to our offense.
Was it more meaningful to you guys, or is it more a fan base thing? Did you in the locker room afterwards say, we finally did it, we finally knocked off the Patriots, or was it just a win that you guys had to have?
It was a win we had to have, but it was against a good team. We had three games where we didn't win, but we beat a really good team on a primetime game, and we got it done.
Is there a sense that you guys need to go down to New Orleans and keep on rolling, or does that buy you, or does this give you the luxury of having to split your last couple of games? Are you guys going to gather around and watch the Chargers and Ravens game on Saturday night to see what you need to do on Sunday?
I think our mindset has to be is we don't have to look around. If we take care of our business and we just roll these last two, it doesn't matter. But that means taking care of your first game. New Orleans is a heck of a team, and we're going to have to go out there and play our best ball, and then we'll take care of that after. But all we can focus on is this one game.
We saw for three quarters of the season, it seemed like it was all offense. Defense wasn't just optional. It was almost non-existent across the NFL landscape. Now, all of a sudden, here come the defenses. Can and will a defense-dominant team win the Super Bowl this year? Or do you suspect that the way things are moving in 2018, that it's going to be one of those powerhouse offenses? And that includes the Pittsburgh Steelers when they're going on all cylinders.
Well, I just think it comes down to who's playing the best defense. You might be the best defense in the regular season, but the playoffs are a different animal. It's going to be a heck of a battle for a lot of different teams. And I think in the Super Bowl, it just comes down to who executes better. I don't think it's offense or defense, but who makes the less mistakes, who's able to execute at a high level.
Do you, again, watching from where I watched it, I wasn't actually bumping into other large human beings over the course of 60 minutes, but it seemed to me that Chargers game was a tough one because they're, you know, perhaps the best team in football, or they've been playing like that, and yet you guys had them. You know, and it may work out that you see them again in the first round. The way things are shaping up, the Chargers could be paying a visit to Heinz Field. Is that something you want? Do you want another shot at that team based on the matchup?
We want another shot at a lot of teams, but you know, we gotta get there first. I'm not gonna look over any of these next two teams, but you know, if we do get a chance, it would be a nice game. We didn't finish first, them, and that's going to sit with us for a while, and we'll have to move on from there.
Yeah, it is interesting. And then the other one that's looming is that you might see the Bald Birdies for a third time this year with Lamar Jackson now under center full time. It's remarkable stuff. Are you singularly focused on the Pittsburgh Steelers, or do you enjoy putting your feet up on with these Saturday games and Monday night games and seeing what else is going in pro football?
I tell you what, my feet are never put up. you know, I'm really just focused on what the Steelers are doing and just trying to make sure we're taking care of our business.
Yeah, well, we know your feet are never put up because not for the work you're doing in pro football, but for the great work you're doing around Pittsburgh and beyond the Hayward House. We appreciate it. The great words were meaningful after what happened to Tree of Life, you know, 6-8 weeks ago. A great citizen, a great member of the Pittsburgh community. Cam Hayward, best health to you. Great success. Have a good time down there in NOLA. Have a happy holidays. And hopefully we'll get to see you playing out there in January coming up here.
Yes, sir. And happy holidays to you and your family. And go Steelers.
Yes, go Steelers indeed. That's a good note to go out on. The great Cam Hayward, everybody.
Dave. Dee da 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 don't. Dave.
All right, time now for our almost weekly visit with number 55 from the Cleveland Browns and the New England Patriots. It's Willie McGinnis. What's the poop, fella?
I'm just hanging out.
So let's talk a little bit about what happened in Heinz Field. Between the New
I was
the
wondering when the that Pittsburgh was coming. Steelers. We're going to start the show.
Well, I think we should start right there. I mean, why move around? Let's talk about the situation at hand there.
Why not?
Up in Foxborough, McGinnis, for real, 3 out of 4 they've lost. You know?
Yeah. Are we talking about their pass record or what just happened in Heinz Field?
All of it.
I know you want to start there. I know you're excited about that. But the question I have for you, because I knew this was coming, mm-hmm. are you really comfortable with that win?
As opposed to what? Like, should I feel like, they got lucky?
The game? Did you watch the game?
No, I heard tale of it, though. I saw the final score.
Oh, you watched it.
I watched
it. Did you watch the game? And when you were looking at the game, did you say, wow, Pittsburgh is just playing unbelievable. They just dominated in every single phase. Or did you watch the game and said, New England shot themselves in the foot again. Another penalty, another mistake. That's bad on situational football. Another mistake, first and goal. I mean, just the multitude of things.
Well,
no, I'm wondering how you watched the game, because I know you're an adamant fan.
I really did feel like the Steelers were having their way largely.
Defensively.
Well, even offensively, even though it wasn't resulting in points, it felt like they were controlling the game for a long time, at least through the first half.
Right.
And I thought, but it was vexing, because that's what watching the Steelers is because you're watching them against the mighty New England Patriots, who have always had their number throughout this century, and the Steelers should win this one, but they're going to give it away because they're somehow not getting into the end zone inexplicably here. And so that was my feeling.
So you did have a little bit of doubt.
Oh, yeah. I'm not a loon, of course. I was watching. I've watched these two teams play each other enough over the last 15 years to know that it probably is going to wind up in the Patriots' favor.
I watched the game, and the one thing that stood out to me is, one, the Steelers played well at home. They came together as a unit.
As you predicted, they could and would.
I shouldn't have never gave them that motivational speech.
I know. It's really on you, 55.
I should have never gave them that motivational speech. But anyway.
Thank you for that, Willie.
You're welcome. They play complimentary football. I thought they ran the ball. Didn't matter who was out there, like you said. They had it in their mind they were going to come out and they were going to run the football. One, because they needed to. Two, like you mentioned, to keep Tom off the field. And it worked out perfectly. The pass production wasn't really there. They made plays at times, but it wasn't there when they needed to punch the ball in and score points. I would say that. And they did. Ben had a couple turnovers, right?
Yes.
Okay. So, and
the
then
first one was horrible.
Right.
So that was when they were going to put the game away, I felt like.
Right. And then I look at the defense and I said, wow, okay, they're doubling Gronk. They're making plays where he needed to. They stepped up. They played good against the run. They pretty much took the run game away from New England. New England has some chunks, but they took it away for the most
part. Can I tell you something? What you predicted is exactly kind of how I was following your lead, but I did think that that's what the Patriots were going to try to do, which is to spin the clock a little bit and control it with Sony Michel. And they really did try to do that specifically in the third quarter.
Right.
They were really trying to feed 26, and you could see that he was starting to have his way, but it was those holding penalties that was the undoing of the Patriots.
It was. And when you're behind and time starts to run down, at some point you got to get away from that.
Mm-hmm.
Now you got to be able to throw the ball. And I thought Pittsburgh understood that there was a perfect situational football for them, that they understood, okay, they can't keep running the ball. At some point they're going to have to start throwing the ball down the field. And they defended well. On the other side of the ball, what I've seen over the last few weeks is something that continues with the Patriots of – usually when you watch this team characteristically, they don't beat themselves. They don't have a bunch of penalties. They're very disciplined.
Mm-hmm.
They're great in situational football. When you need somebody to step up and make a play, usually one of the playmakers will step up and make plays. And that's just the team. They're consistent. They haven't been consistent with that. 14 penalties.
This dynasty, as you told me, I mean, 6-7 years ago now,
right.
And you were spot on, and it's fascinating that this dynasty is entirely predicated, or close to it, on discipline.
Yeah.
And we're going to win games by a single score because we know that the other team is not going to maintain the discipline to the degree that we do, and that little crack that they show somewhere over 60 minutes will be our edge of victory.
There you go.
And they're not doing that right
they're
now.
They're not doing it on any phase of the game for the past couple of weeks, you know. And that's not just offensively, defensively. You know, you're giving up one-on-one big plays for touchdowns. When you're looking in the backfield, your guys running the option route, getting open. You're not tackling well in the open field. When there's a situation where you need to stop a player from running the ball because you know they're running the clock down, and if they convert, you got to spend another timeout, basically. Or you can get off the field. You can't stop it. So you know the situation. You're just not playing great technique. And you're not executing. So all those things that we talked about where we're used to seeing them be very, very consistent, we just haven't. And, you know, me knowing that team, me knowing how much how hard they work, the pressure that the staff puts on them, the pressure that they put on themselves, and how they work to play at a certain level every single week, I'm not one of those guys that say, you know what, it's over. I would be wrong to say it's over. I'm talking about this year only.
I hear you.
It's over. But if they want to play deep into the playoffs, which will probably be on the road, they've struggled on the road, they're going to have to eliminate all the bad football we've seen. There's a sign in the locker room that says, eliminate bad football. They're going to have to eliminate bad football. If they're gonna play better and compete with some of these teams, because it didn't matter if it was Pittsburgh or any other team in the league, they did enough to themselves. And I'm not taking credit from Pittsburgh. I thought they did a phenomenal job, but they did it. They did enough to themselves to not beat a lot of teams in the NFL.
Oh, there's no doubt. So quickly, I want to go over a couple of things point out a few items with the Patriots, and then we'll move on here.
Okay.
First of all, I think that they are built, if they can eliminate the holding calls, easier said than done, I do get the sense that there's a formula there. They can run Sony Michel. He's good. And somehow, maybe it was the injuries, maybe it's James White and the other guys that they have as options. But I think if they leaned on Sony Michel, right, 20, 25 touches a game in the postseason, I think they could make some hay
there.
Which
they've been doing.
Right. So first of all, the defense. Is it a matter of them going dime package as a base defense that's killing them, that teams are now saying, like, well, let's just physically go right at them then, if this is who they're going to throw out on the field against us, right?
Well, you got to match to what you're seeing. So most offenses are 11 personnel. So you got to have a nickel in, or you got to have a linebacker that's like a very good cover guy that can cover the one-on-ones with the backs, tight ends, or in space, and be able to play the run at the same time, right? Because that's the matchup game all these offensive quarters, they do.
Is that why in general, why in
no, they're
in
used
the
to
last
11 personnel. That's something they've been used to playing.
But is this the league's reaction to these offenses throwing it all over the place, putting up 40, 50 points a game? Well, now we just have to go dime, and now teams are saying, oh, well, if they're going to do that, now we're going to run it on you.
Well,
and the press is scoring.
Right. Well, you want the smaller guy in the box. You know, because you can motion a running back into the backfield and you can run the ball.
Two, is there an issue at receiver for Tom Brady? Because the weirdest one of them all, Gronk, okay, he's got a bad back and he's taken a physical beating. And it's one of the weird paradoxes I always point at in pro sports. People say he's the biggest guy on the field. Shouldn't he last the longest? No, he is the common denominator in all those collisions.
He hit more than anybody.
Right. The DBs move on and play somebody else the next week. Gronkowski is always in those collisions, just as Shaq was, just as Earl Campbell was, Mario Lemieux, and so on. Right. The big guys are the ones who take the biggest beating over the course of time. So fine with him. Maybe Julian Edelman's a little slower. The weirdest one of all to me is Josh Gordon. Yeah. Why do they feed him?
Well, I'm not sure. I know he dropped the one. They hit him right in the chest for the first down. He dropped it.
And then one hit him in the elbow.
Right. I just didn't understand what was going on.
But just get him in space, period. That's
the
end of it.
You know, it's easy to say. But how do we know that Pittsburgh didn't understand that and take that away, too? You know, even Edelman, you know, he had a couple drops. He wasn't himself. And, you know, nobody's perfect. I didn't play the game perfect by any means. But we are used to seeing these guys routinely make plays, make certain plays. And it just hasn't happened. Hogan, where was he?
Yeah, well, right. They gave him the ball in space. Yeah,
somebody's one-on-one.
Right. He had a chance to tie that game. They said, look, we gave you half the field, Chris Hogan. Beat one guy out there, and you know, they made a nice – you know, for that side of things, the Steelers tackled better than they have in 3 years in that game. And I don't know – it was a subtle thing. I don't even know how you coach that in 2018, but they were finishing off tackles as a group. I mean, they were banging those guys as they were going to the ground.
You're supposed to.
You know, I know, but –
Dallas, the Cowboys are the best.
But it's hard to do that, though, in this day and age.
I mean, you got
to
hustle. A lot of guys don't hustle.
They were hitting them hard out there.
And that's what you got to do. I think they had in their mind that every single play, you know, we've got to have 11 to the football.
Mm-hmm.
We can't give these guys an inch. We can't give them anything.
You could feel that coming through, that's what Tomlin was preaching, right?
Like, why wouldn't you? You know, they're tired of it. They're at home. Their backs are kind of against the wall. You drop that game, Baltimore wins. Now you possibly
would have been over,
not in the playoffs, like the scenarios they say. You know, you heard Ben talk about, well, we don't know if we were at the crossroads. You were at the crossroads. You were right there.
And after the fact, they all admitted. Like, right. Yeah, we knew. We just couldn't say that before the game. Right. And then lastly, talk about getting hit and all that sort of thing. We've talked about that before. Old guys, old QBs don't lose their arm. It doesn't just magically turn mortal. The issue is that most of those guys start to understand their own mortality as human beings, and they don't like taking the beating anymore once they're late 30s, early 40s. And is that what's going on with Brady right now? I mean, he did that pick he threw to Joe Hayden. He's trying to push that ball out of bounds.
But he's also trying to avoid a sack.
He's also... Yeah, but
he was turning. Like, he was trying to get away from the sack when he threw it. He jumped, and he still got hit. You know, he tried to avoid the sack. And, I mean, they were hitting him. You're dead on. But I don't know any quarterback that likes to get hit.
I'm not saying anybody wants it, but I'm saying they start to feel it more and more, and they're like, man, I want to get rid of this a little quicker.
You know what? And the technique wasn't good when he tried to throw that away, because Gronk was open earlier. He just couldn't get it to
him. That's right.
Because of the pressure. And then if you go back a week ago when he had Hogan wide open in the end zone and he missed them badly, well, it was because he was about to get hit. So he was flinching in the pocket trying to deliver the ball at the same time, which I get. You know, you're not trying to get knocked out of the game, but
completely get it.
But it's because of the pressure that some of these throws are off. Of course, with any quarterback, it's because some of the pressure. Now, what has to happen is he's one of the best at using that little box in the pocket, stepping up, stepping in, making move, maneuvering in there. But now people are bringing guys all over the place, so it's hard to step in one direction. He's not going to run out of the pocket and outrun anybody.
And it's also specifically, people often talk about Tom Brady doesn't want interior pressure. And that's not because, I mean, obviously for the practical reason, you wouldn't want somebody very large running right at you as you're trying to throw the ball. But beyond that,
who wants that?
What you saw was, but Cam Hayward specifically was getting such a push in the second half. He was driving whatever O lineman was across from him. He was consistently driving that guy right into Brady from the jump. Like, the ball would get snapped, and Cam Hayward was 3 yards deep on him, and he couldn't therefore step up.
One key when you play against quarterbacks that are not as mobile, you want your rush rules change. You don't have to be as disciplined at keeping contained outside, because you know they can't really break outside. And if they do, you can run them down.
They want to push you.
You
want to
make inside moves. So if I'm going against a tackle, I'm making a lot of inside moves because I want to affect and enter the pocket now. If I'm a DT and I'm over the guards, I want to make quick moves and get right back in line, or I want to pull rush him right back into the quarterback's lap, because we know we're going to have everybody crash in the pocket. And he's not going to be able to step up or maneuver in that little box. You want to crush that little that little pocket right there.
I mean, yeah, even when he gets pushed from the pocket, he's not a threat to take off.
No,
the
you
ball,
saw him on the interception to Hayden.
Exactly.
He got out of the pocket. He tried to throw, and it was a bad throw.
Yeah.
So.
All right, fascinating stuff there. Maybe you and me should open up like a pass rushers academy or something.
Right.
I'll just like work with everybody on my swim move. Teach everybody my. But you know, I
guess that's a rip.
Yeah. I know what I'm.
Okay.
Telling me about.
I'm just saying, that was
we're just trading notes here, you know. We're two high end pass rushers, you know. That's it. And then I can the swim. Where'd Damashek go? Oh, he's laying on top of the QB. Oh, that, you know.
Yeah.
That's Dave Damashek.
All right, very pleased to be joined right now by the Houston Texans candidate nominee I guess it's both things. Candidate nominee. Either way, the Walter Payton Man of the Year, it's Whitney Mercilus. How are you? And congratulations to you, sir.
I'm good. I'm good. Appreciate that. Thank you. Means
well,
a lot.
Yeah, a big comeback for you professionally this season, and then the nomination. Wonderful stuff for you. Tell us about it. I want to hear from you about With Mercy and the great work you're doing there. You've raised quite a bit of money, eh?
Yeah, about $325,000 over 2 years. So that's a lot. Yeah, just. It's a great support by the community and all that, and they understand exactly what we're doing, which, by the way, we support children with disabilities, which we rotate disabilities each year. And we started off, when we first opened, we started off supporting children with autism. And now, after that cycle has ended, now we're rotated over to supporting children with cerebral palsy. And so it's a great deal. We partner up with a lot of foundations, and we donate money to these foundations to provide services and camps and all that to a lot of families who can't really afford those type of services and stuff like that. So it's really awesome.
Well, wonderful stuff. It really is praiseworthy that you take the time to do that. Let's talk a little bit of pro football, shall we, in 2018. But before we do, one thing I always, when the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award comes up, I am reminded, coolest trophy in sports? That it's up there. It's a cool looking one.
It is definitely. You know, it looked good on my shelf for sure.
Yeah, he's like, you know, it's sweet now with the cape on and everything else. By the way, if the MVP trophy has no name attached to it, nobody knows what it even looks like. Who should it be named after, and what should the pose be? Could be anybody in the history of pro football.
Oh man. Dang, that's a good question. Dave Buckus, maybe?
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, you could do a lot worse than that. I thought you might go from Houston. I thought you might go Earl Campbell, you know, somebody like that, you know, half his jersey torn off kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, that's a possibility.
What about one thing I point back to consistently with you guys and your rise, you really turned into sort of a win steamroller for a couple of months there. How much in the locker room have you guys discussed Frank Reich from the Colts going for it in overtime? And that kind of, it feels to me like it galvanized them, but also you guys, it got you that win. Have you guys looked back at that and said, what happens if that game turns out in a tie? Are we in the same place?
That's a good question. I'm not too sure how that would turn out if that game ended up in a tie, but you know, we let that one get away, and we understood we got to come out swinging. All right. After that, sure enough, we got to pull out the win out in New York, and now we just got to win out to make some good things happen in our favor, honestly.
Do you guys talk amongst yourselves that the AFC South, even in a year of this high offense, although the defenses are starting to rise up a little bit around the league, but do you guys point to the AFC South collectively, not just you guys, is the division a defense?
Man, it seems like that. You know, it's always a battle of the defenses. Who can contain some of these offenses, some of these weapons that's out there? And, you know, who's going to play to the last man from the start to finish and keep the game in a manageable type of deal for your offense to score? And it seems to, you know, turn that way, even though, you know, the game is definitely an offensive game for sure. I would say so, just with the rule changes and things of that nature. But it's the defense that can play discipline, do their job at the end of the day, and keep the game within a manageable range or try to get a shutout.
You have people love, including me, love to celebrate your name. You have as good a football name as there is. Mercilus, after all. And yet, and as great as you've been in the NFL now, you know, I'm not the first one to point this out, but there's J.J. Watt. He cuts a big national figure. There's Jadeveon Clowney, who was famous before he ever put on an NFL uniform for that one bowl game play. And now you get the Honey Badger. How does that sit with you? Do you care? Is it or does it suit you better for your personality?
Suits me just fine, honestly. It's great to have all those guys in the locker room, honestly. You know, You get to see such talented guys come in and play the game in such a way that inspires you to up your game always. And it keeps you accountable as far as, hey, man, I'm just going to go out there, do my job, and play to an exceptionally high level. And that's what these guys bring to the table with their own variety, the type of game that they play. And it just elevates the game around for everybody around them.
Well, pro football players, one thing that I've picked up on over the last decade is that pro football players and pro football teams love to impose a chip on their shoulder. Is the chip that the Houston Texans apply to their collective shoulder, no one talks about us enough. We have an electric quarterback. We have perhaps the most talented wide receiver in the game and beyond that. And our defense is as rugged as it comes. And yet we don't get enough buzz. Is that what you guys are using as you head towards January this year?
No question. The thing is, look, it is what it is. We don't get, we're not going to get, the publicity or anything like that, even though we've gone out and we've tried to prove ourselves time and time after again. But, at the end of the day, it's what have you done for me lately as far as that goes in this league. And, everybody says, oh, we're going to fall short and all that. Well, the thing is, of course, we got that chip on our shoulder and we're just going to go out there. We're going to do exactly what we need to do is go get these wins and make sure we come out and everybody's talking about us at the end of the day.
I know that you have to say the right thing and you have to hedge a little bit, but deep down, are you guys, when you talk to JJ or Jadavian or Honey Badger or anybody else in that locker room, do you guys say, one big difference for us this year would be to not have to play wild card weekend. It would be really nice to be one of those two teams with a bye. Is that someday, because you have a big trip coming up all of a sudden to Philadelphia that looked a couple weeks ago like, the Texans should be able to handle that one. All of a sudden, Eagles feel like they're playing for something. They feel galvanized by Foles. Is getting that bye important to you guys?
We can definitely make something that happen very special around here that hasn't been done around here ever. But we just got to focus on this week, which is against Philly, and make sure we get this W. And it comes down to these type of games, November and December football, which is very important within this league. And if you don't take care of that, you're not going to be able to get, to some of the perks in the postseason, or you may not even make the postseason at all.
Let's talk about you're from Akron, Ohio. Are you keeping your eyes on LeBron and company? Are you or have you morphed into now a Houston Rockets fan, or where do you sit in pro hoops?
I'm not much of a, I don't follow basketball like that, but I've been following LeBron a little bit just for, because he's from the same hometown and all that. And so seeing him just his growth, all that, what he's done for Cleveland, brought championships and all that, and then moved on to LA, that I think that was pretty dope. And then also I do follow the Rockets a little bit. Hadn't had the greatest season going starting out, so they'll definitely be able to turn things around, get things corrected. It's just the way how the game goes.
And listen, pro football dominates most anywhere, but like I say, guys like to have a chip on their shoulder. They're competitive pro athletes. How much did it matter to you guys that the Astros, to see how the city responded to the Astros getting over the hump, and did it make you hungrier than you already were?
Oh, it definitely made us hungry. They can make it that far, win the whole thing, then obviously we got to go in there and we got to do our thing and take care of business and bring a championship for Houston. And so this year, it's right at right at our fingertips, and we just got to go out there and control our destiny by getting these wins one at a time. That's about it. And come back, and we'll be able to celebrate with all the fans.
I don't know how much sway you have with the equipment, staff, and otherwise. But first of all, I've talked with Arian Foster about this years ago, and he signed off on this. We got to do something about the uniforms. That, I think that will make it sing. Like, that'll get more attention if we can thread the needle on that. In the meantime, though, do you like those, the ones that started out as your color rush with those nice stripes on the shoulders and that look?
I actually liked it.
I like it too.
I don't know who hates them.
I love them. Those are the best. Those are your best unis.
Oh, no doubt. I wish they were like our base unis for sure.
Right. Yeah. Tell the equipment staff what you need is you need to put the red socks back on your base uniforms. That makes them sing. It makes it pop. That splash of color really is a big difference. And in January, you'll get some attention for it.
I mean, you might have some swag to yourself right there.
Okay. Yeah, I'd like you to do that because I want you focused in on winning games. Let me just impart that little bit of advice, and that might be enough to push you over the hump.
I'll put in a good word for you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Whitney Merciless, in the meantime, congratulations sincerely, and thanks on behalf of society for doing great stuff when you're not compelled to do it. It's wonderful that you take the time to do that. It's With Mercy, $325,000 raised already over just a couple of years, partnered up with Eastern Seals of Houston to continue that great work. Best wishes with that. Best wishes in January, and good health to you throughout.
Oh, yeah, appreciate that. Thank you.
Have a happy holidays. Whitney Merciless, everybody.